This is the Josh Hammer Show.
Remember Tucker Carlson? You actually might not, and that's kind of the point. Tucker had the biggest perch in all of right-leaning media. That prime 8 p.m. Eastern time slot on Fox News. His nightly monologues made for must-watch television. Rarely there was a night that went by that I did not tune in myself. I wanted to hear what Tucker had to say. Unfortunately, ever since Fox let Tucker go, and we still don't know exactly why that was, but it's been about a year now, and ever since then, Tucker has gone down a profoundly disturbing path. The data points are rapidly accumulating at this point. Tucker has gone from witty and edgy to outright conspiratorial and genuinely dark. He recently had his propaganda tour in Moscow. This was back in February, where he went to interview Vladimir Putin. Now, I didn't necessarily have a massive objection to interviewing Putin. People interview tough, terrible people all the time. There is ample precedent for this. You've had many liberals who have interviewed Putin in previous years. But okay, I mean, that was an eyebrow-raising exercise. He didn't necessarily ask all the toughest questions. And when Putin went on for this extended 10 to 15 minute rant at the beginning of the interview, giving this absurd revisionist history of Russia about how the Poles actually started World War II, the very Poles that were invaded by the Nazis, you know, Tucker didn't exactly butt in there, but okay, fine. You did the interview. Then before he left Moscow, this is when it got interesting. Remember that clip of Tucker in the supermarket talking about how amazing it was that the Soviet or Russian supermarkets, distinction without difference, that these Russian supermarkets had this nifty gadget where you check in the shopping cart there and then you check out at the end. It turns out, by the way, you know, we've had that technology in America for many decades as well. And then he went to the subway station talking about how awesome the subway system in Moscow was. The same subway system, by the way, that was literally built by gulag labor during the Soviet Union. Tucker Carlson on that trip proved to be just as much the pro-Russia useful idiot as Bernie Sanders was back when he was flying the hammer and sickle flag in the 1970s, when he honeymooned in Moscow at the heart of the Cold War. I say that, by the way, as someone who happens to largely share Tucker's stance on Ukraine. That doesn't mean that I'm actively shilling for Vladimir Putin and the Russian Federation. That is a crucial and important distinction. Well, Tucker has outdone himself yet again. This past Tuesday, April 9th, he had on his X show a man by the name of Reverend Dr. Munther Isaac. He is the director of a Bethlehem-based organization called Christ at the Checkpoint. Tucker told his audience that he was interested in learning about how Christians are treated in Israel. Unfortunately, the viewers of Tucker's program learned absolutely nothing about how Christians are treated in Israel because they heard from a pastor who happens to be located not really in Israel, but in Palestinian Authority-controlled Bethlehem. Bethlehem is not under Israel's jurisdiction. It is under Palestinian Authority jurisdiction. In fact, between 1922 and 2017, the Christian population in Bethlehem dropped from 70,000 to 47,000. It declined from 84% of the population in 1922 to 22% in 2007, the last year for which I have seen data. That's because the Palestinian Authority, the profoundly corrupt and terror-supporting organization of Yasser Arafat and Mahmoud Abbas, when they took over, they Islamicized Bethlehem. You couldn't necessarily see it, but Munther Isaac, when he was on camera with Tucker Carlson, had a proverbial gun to his head. He knew that if he did not toe the PLO-Hamas line, that he would be a dead man the next day. He would mysteriously fall down a flight of stairs, much like Putin's opposition happens to him in Russia, or would take an unfortunate bullet in between the teeth. Turns out Munther Isaac, if you go to his Twitter page, you look at his location, what does it say? Occupied Palestine. Not exactly a fair interviewee, wouldn't you say, Tucker Carlson? This man also, on Tucker's show, said horrific lies. Said that Israel was responsible for the Al-Shifa hospital bombing. One of the first blood libels of this conflict going back to October. Turns out that it was Palestinian Islamic Jihad, an Islamist rival to Hamas in the Gaza Strip. It was Islamic Jihad that launched that fateful rocket, the rocket that was aimed for Israel. It fell short and landed in the Shifa Hospital parking lot. Nonetheless, this Munther Isaac repeating these demonstrable lies to Tucker's perhaps not so sizable audience online. Turns out this pastor, in videos that surfaced on social media, was essentially praising the Hamas Holocaust of October 7th, was praising the Palestinians for the courage of their siege, was speaking of the murdered 1,200-plus Israelis in the most dehumanizing terms possible. So in order to talk about how Christians are allegedly mistreated in Israel, Tucker brought on a PLO stooge who's not even really located in Israel, and is a professional anti-Israel, anti-Semitic activist whose public opinion is that the state of Israel should not exist. In reality, of course, Israel is the only country in the region that has any sizable of a Christian population that is growing, is an expanding population, and inside Israel itself, Christians, just like Jews and Muslims and anyone else, have full, unequivocal religious liberty rights. That is the actual situation. Those are the facts. But it seems like Tucker Carlson these days is increasingly uninterested in the facts. He is increasingly interested in becoming the 2020s version of Pat Buchanan, or dare I say, if we start to really go down this road, perhaps even Father Coughlin of the pre-war era. That is the road that Tucker Carlson is tracking. That is the road that Candace Owens recently discarded from the Daily Wire. That is the road that these people are increasingly tracking. By the way, in one other data point that I just have to point out here, do you know who tweeted out Tucker Carlson's interview of Munther Isaac? A man by the name of Hussam Zomlot tweeted it out and said, quote, an important interview and a powerful voice with a fist bump emoji. Hussam Zomlot is the so-called quote-unquote ambassador of the so-called quote-unquote state of Palestine to the United Kingdom. In other words, he is a PLO official. Tucker Carlson at this point is not just doing Russia-era propaganda, the likes of which would have made Bernie Sanders in the 1970s blush. He is doing propaganda for the PLO. Folks, I'm sorry, but at some point, again, I loved watching Tucker's nightly monologues. Maybe Candace said an interesting thing here or there. Not many, to be honest with you. At some point, you have to look at these people who have sold their souls, whether it is to the profit motive or whether it is to chasing the Groypers and the neo-Nazis on the far extremes of social media. And you have to look at them and say, you know what? I once respected you, but I respect myself too much to continue respecting you. So I'm going to pull the cord. I'm going to stop subscribing and you're out. That has to happen at this point to Tucker Carlson.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
In the year 2024, if you hear someone chanting, "Death to America," death to America. What is your first thought as to who that person is and where that person is? You might be forgiven for thinking that that person might be located in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Their so-called legislature, after all, is known to chant this quite frequently. You might be forgiven for thinking that this is in Pyongyang, North Korea, where Kim Jong-un would certainly love to preside over death to America chants. Perhaps they might be some rabble-rousers outside Moscow. Perhaps you might have some fringe actors in Xi Jinping's orbit in China. But surely you would not necessarily expect that to be happening here on American soil. Surely you would not expect this to be shouted from the rooftops by the very voters that the incumbent president of the United States is now actively courting and seeking as he runs for a shambolic re-election to try to salvage his godforsaken, awful presidency. Well, last Friday, in Dearborn, Michigan, that's exactly what happened. There was an hour-long rally held at the Henry Ford Centennial Library. By the way, I sincerely doubt the naming of that library in Dearborn after Henry Ford is itself an accident. There was arguably no more infamous neo-Nazi operating in early 20th century America than Henry Ford, who was a known admirer of Hitler's, wrote prolifically about the benefits of the Nazi regime and all that they were doing right. It is surely not an accident that this death to Israel, death to America rally in the jihadi capital of America, Dearborn, Michigan, was held at the Henry Ford Centennial Library. But sure enough, in a video posted by the Middle East Media Research Institute, Memory, which does fantastic work, we clearly see a local activist by the name of Takek Bazi leading a mass shout of death to America, death to America, death to Israel, death to Israel. What was the occasion last Friday, you might ask? Turns out it was International Al-Quds Day. Al-Quds Day is an annual day literally invented by the Iranian regime. The first ever Al-Quds Day was held in Iran in 1979, the year of the Islamic Revolution there, the year that the Islamist revolutionaries overthrew the Shah. The Iranians created Al-Quds Day as part and parcel of their propaganda. Al-Quds in Arabic just means Jerusalem. Here you have on the streets of America, not just Islamist sympathizers. They 100% unambiguously are that. You have a fifth column right here on our shores. The enemy is no longer simply abroad. The enemy is here inside the hen house. We have let them in. And we are told by our elites that if you ask questions like this, if you point out, to merely point out the utter lunacy of condoning people on our shores chanting death to America, we are told that by merely pointing that out, you are engaging in white, patriarchal, transphobic, Islamophobic, xenophobic, whatever sort of talk. Don't believe it for a second. You know, I'm old enough to remember the 9/11 attacks on American soil. By the way, one of the crazy things when I speak on college campuses these days that I realize is that the college kids were often not even alive when 9/11 happened. Crazy. But I was 12 years old. I was in seventh grade. I remember seeing the smoke from the Twin Towers, literally up the Hudson River. It was very much my come to adulthood, come to political maturity moment. I was only 12 years old, but I've been on a steady, the exact same intellectual journey ever since then. That smoke from the Twin Towers, that Islamist attack, that jihadi assault on these United States on that fateful day was the exact same assault under a slightly different name, Al-Qaeda versus Hamas, same ideology, that Israel suffered on their own version of 9/11, October 7th, 2023. And in the years after 9/11, you might remember the Ground Zero Mosque. Do y'all even remember that controversy? The activists want to build a mosque literally at Ground Zero, within spitting distance of the former Twin Towers that the radical jihadis took down with their suicide planes. Back then, back when people were still relatively sane, that proposal was thankfully defeated. Back when it was not Islamophobic to say that you are opposed to glorifying a house of worship for the religion of peace there at the Ground Zero site itself. Back then, that was not called Islamophobic. It was called common sense. But nonetheless, as Joe Biden in this election year continues to turn against our ally Israel while they are at war, as he continues to hamstring their military efforts, as he continues to throw them under the bus such that Hamas is so emboldened that it will not even countenance hostage deals, it is worth just focusing on how disgusting it is that these are the miscreants, the fifth column subversive scumbags that this White House is actively courting in this re-election year. Now, the White House, to their modicum of credit, purported to condemn. They said, okay, we don't support that. Okay, whatever. It's worth noting, by the way, that Rashida Tlaib, the pro-Islamist, pro-jihadi congresswoman from that very area, has refused to condemn the Death to America chants. Makes you wonder, doesn't it, how this woman is possibly representing the United States of America in our national legislature. Disgusting stuff there. More generally speaking, it is incidents like this that ought to underscore the absolute unequivocal folly of open borders immigration policy as it has existed for the past 30, 40, 50 years. The result of open borders immigration policy, which is the mentality that human beings can be treated like widgets, that you can just trade them and let them in for purely economic concerns, material concerns, as cheap labor for the corporations, and that you will not ultimately suffer any downstream cultural consequences. We are now suffering the very results, the fruits of that most poisonous of trees. That is what is happening here on the streets of Dearborn, Michigan. How far we have come from a saner, more commonsensical approach to immigration policy. How far we have come from that sentiment which John Jay, one of our most underappreciated founding fathers, what he wrote in The Federalist Number 2. He was talking here about how America came to being after the Revolutionary War against the Brits. Quote, "With equal pleasure, I have as often taken notice that Providence has been pleased to give this one connected country to one united people, a people descended from the same ancestors, speaking the same language, professing the same religion, attached to the same principles of government, very similar in their manners and customs, and so forth." Again, you are told today that you are xenophobic, Islamophobic, white supremacist, racist, for espousing the most commonsensical of opinions that subversive fifth column pro-jihadi scum, the likes of which we heard chanting death to America recently in Dearborn, that they should not be in America. But you are not scum for having these thoughts. You are an American patriot, and do not let anyone shut you up about it.
This is the Josh Hammer Show.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
On Monday, April 15th, tax day, the first criminal prosecution of a former United States president and current leading presidential candidate is set to commence in earnest. Jury selection, voir dire, that is going to start in New York City for the prosecution there of Donald Trump. This is the prosecution, if you're only half paying attention and confused because there are so many of them. This is the prosecution brought by the Soros-funded DA there in Manhattan, Alvin Bragg. Alvin Bragg is prosecuting Donald Trump for the so-called hush money payments that were made on the precipice of the 2016 presidential election. Those are the payments made by Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's so-called fixer, who himself has subsequently served jail time. These are payments made by Michael Cohen to Stormy Daniels, the porn actress. You can't make this stuff up, folks. I mean, if you're writing a script in Hollywood, you can't make this stuff up any better than real life. And Alvin Bragg is prosecuting them for fraudulent bookkeeping. Allegedly, we think, we're not told, but we think, based on his theory of the case, we think that his allegation is that it's fraudulent bookkeeping done in furtherance of an election law violation because it was an illicit campaign contribution. There are too many problems with this case to possibly count. One, as I just alluded to, is the fact that Alvin Bragg has literally not even spelled out for us what his theory of the case is. All we know, based on the 34-count indictment that dropped about a year ago, is that it is 34 counts of fraudulent bookkeeping in New York State. But fraudulent bookkeeping is a misdemeanor, not a felony. And the statute of limitations for that crime also told years ago. So in order to escalate a misdemeanor to a felony while simultaneously managing to get around the statute of limitations problem, Alvin Bragg is going to have to demonstrate beyond a reasonable doubt, because this is a criminal prosecution, that the fraudulent bookkeeping alleged activity was done in furtherance of, again, this campaign finance violation. His theory of the case seems to be that this was all done in an effort to boost Trump's campaign chances of prevailing against Hillary Clinton, which he, of course, did. There are so many problems here, and as we start the trial on Monday, it's worth bearing a few of them in mind. One is the fact that the judge presiding over this case, Juan Merchan, appears to be deeply compromised. His daughter, Lauren Merchan, is an executive at Authentic Campaigns, which is a Democratic Party fundraising vehicle. They essentially work in Democratic Party politics. Lauren Merchan's own clients, through her employer, have been fundraising upwards of $90 million using the image and likeness and trading essentially on the fact that Lauren Merchan's father is the judge who could potentially put Donald Trump in jail. Donald Trump tried to get the judge in this case to recuse himself. That motion was unsuccessful. Furthermore, as we approach jury selection on the 15th, we got a hint of what the jury selection questions are going to be. Here are some of them. Do you listen to or watch talk radio? If so, which programs? Do you currently follow Donald Trump on any social media site, or have you done so in the past? Have you considered yourself a supporter of or belong to any of the following? The QAnon movement, Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, Three Percenters. You know, I literally don't even know what the Three Percenters are, first of all. But when you're getting in the habit here of jury selection questions, trying to filter out people for being QAnon or Proud Boys, probably a decent indication that you are not going to get a particularly fair or impartial jury of one's peers in this case. More generally speaking, Manhattan, obviously, which is where this trial is going to be, is a county that has broke for Democratic candidates at the presidential level by somewhere between 50 and 70 points in most presidential elections. So good luck getting anything remotely resembling a fair jury here. The facts, by the way, for Alvin Bragg in this case are so damning, are so utterly preposterous, that one, his own predecessor, Cy Vance Jr., in the New York County, New York DA's office, as well as their federal colleagues at the SDNY, the Southern District of New York, both Cy Vance and the SDNY had looked into potentially prosecuting Trump on these exact charges. They said no. Alvin Bragg, because he is a Soros-funded hack, who, much like Tish James, the attorney general of New York State, campaigned for office on a get Trump, prosecute Trump, incarcerate Trump platform. Alvin Bragg has no such compunctions. Absolutely bonkers stuff. But we are entering a very dangerous moment here when it comes to American politics. Let's not mince any words. This is the first time that there will be the criminal prosecution of a former president of the United States. This will be the first time that there is a criminal prosecution of a leading presidential candidate for the United States. Now, in New York State with Alvin Bragg and in Fulton County, Georgia with Fannie Willis, you're dealing with local district attorneys. Fine, fair, so be it. But with the other two prosecutions in Washington, D.C. and Florida, you're dealing with a federal special counsel in Jack Smith, who directly reports to Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States. Don't be fooled by the phrase special counsel. They call it special counsel and not independent counsel for a reason. The old independent counsel statute expired in the late 90s, early 2000s, around there, because there became a consensus due primarily to a blistering and accurate dissent from Antonin Scalia in a 1980s case called Morrison versus Olson. There became a rising legal consensus that an independent counsel, which operates or purports to operate outside of the hierarchy of the U.S. Department of Justice, the understanding became accurately and correctly that such a position is unconstitutional and violative of the separation of powers. So the special counsel is special insofar as he is tasked with a certain individual or certain crimes, but he is very much part of the DOJ chain of command. In fact, a different special counsel, Robert Hur, back in February when he released the transcript, the 340-plus page finding his report when it came to Joe Biden's own classified documents investigation, Robert Hur released that report on the express orders of Merrick Garland. So don't tell me that the special counsel does not report to the attorney general. He does. Well, who does Merrick Garland report to? He reports to the president of the United States, Joe Biden, who, oh, by the way, is running against Donald Trump, if you haven't noticed by now. So Joe Biden's henchmen are not currently on the campaign trail trying to carpet bomb the airwaves with January 6th footage, trying to bombard you into thinking that fascism, authoritarianism, white supremacy is all on the rise. They are actively trying to prosecute, incarcerate, throw in jail, bankrupt, all the above, to their leading political opposition. Folks, this is a point of no return. It is somewhat trite to say it, but it is absolutely a crossing of the Rubicon moment in these United States. First world republics, no matter what your own thoughts on Donald Trump might be, no matter what they are, I don't particularly care. Love him, hate him, I don't give a crap. If you love this country, if you call yourself a constitutionalist, if you cherish the rule of law, if you cherish lowercase r Republican self-governance, if you cherish this great experiment in ordered liberty that our founders bequeathed us, you have to be apoplectic at what is currently now unfolding. It is indeed entirely legitimate at a moment like this to ask yourself, how exactly is America different than third world banana republics, tin pot dictatorships, the ones who won't even run their opposition candidate? Sure, you have some more first world countries. Italy would be an example that has in the past prosecuted their opposition. But this is a very, very, very dangerous road to go down for these United States. The case in New York City is the only one that might actually cross the finish line before November. That is a silver lining. That is some cause for solace. But if there is any guilty verdict here, and if the election is ultimately decided on those grounds, get ready for the asterisk. It's going to get ugly, and unfortunately, Biden has no one to blame here but himself.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
It's Hammer Time.
Beware the repackaging of DEI. So as DEI bans impact colleges across the country, it turns out that many institutions and universities are renaming their offices to something perhaps a little more innocuous. They're using words like belonging, community engagement, or student development. So to give you one example, it's the University of South Carolina that changed its DEI office to the Division of Access, Civil Rights, and Community. We're seeing this play out all across the country. And what they're trying to do is just skirt around the law. I mean, it's basically as simple as that. You've now seen an increasingly number of Republican legislature-led states, from Florida to Texas. Wisconsin was another recent example. Iowa was another recent example. And they are, within some confines, they are seeking to ban DEI on public university campuses within their state. Texas was a huge, huge deal. The University of Texas Austin just fully shut down their DEI department. We had done that here in Florida already a couple of legislative sessions ago. But you have to make sure that when you are in the business of crafting these laws and drafting this language, that you specify exactly what it is that you are seeking to shut down. Because, look, a spade is still a spade, whether it calls itself the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Office or the Division of Community Engagement, which is what Clemson University calls their former DEI office, probably trying to skirt around South Carolina legislation there. We are ultimately after not a specific title or a specific label. We are ultimately after a toxic, ruinous, and cancerous ideology that is anti-Western, un-American, and threatens to tear the national fabric apart. It is that ideology that must be eradicated on university campuses all across America. And we must make sure that legislators, Republican, or for that matter, Democrat, that they are on high guard on these attempts to skirt around the law and make sure that their laws are drafted accordingly. Washington state judge has declared a large capacity magazine ban unconstitutional. So Cowlitz County, Washington Superior Court Judge Gary Beshore found that Washington state's ban on the sale of magazines with more than 10 rounds runs contrary to both the Washington state constitution and the United States constitution. This is a potentially very big deal. So the Bruin case came down from the U.S. Supreme Court in the summer of 2022. It was one of the big cases from what was otherwise a very big Supreme Court term. That was the same term as the Dobbs abortion opinion as well. And in Bruin, it was the first time that the Supreme Court held that it wasn't just the keep arms part of the Second Amendment that was doing the work, but it's also the bear arms part, and that this is essentially just as important. And they therefore threw out some of the most restrictive carry regimes across the country in places like New York, Maryland, Illinois, and so forth, where the burden of persuasion is on the petitioner, is on the citizen, to demonstrate to the government why he or she needs that. And the Bruin case formulated this test, which basically said that for all gun regulations, you really need to show a historical precedent. The test of Bruin is a history and tradition test. And here is the key quote that I read from Judge Bashor here in Washington State explaining why he struck down Washington State's ban on so-called high-capacity magazines, which, you know, by the way, I call common sense magazines. Anyway, here is Judge Bashor explaining, quote, "There was no appetite to limit gun rights by the founders. Though the specific technology available today may not have been envisioned, the founders expected technological advancements. The result is few, if any, historical analog laws by which a state can justify a modern firearms regulation." Pretty powerful stuff. Few, if any, historical analog laws by which a state can justify a modern regulation. Hopefully that spreads from just the state judiciary out in Washington State. Hopefully this reasoning and this logic is adopted sooner rather than later by federal courts all across the country, because unfortunately, since the Bruin case was decided in 2022, you actually have seen some lower appellate courts, including the Ninth Circuit out in California on the West Coast. You have seen some of these appellate courts try to skirt around the law. And we're ultimately going to have the U.S. Supreme Court weighed in again. They have been reluctant to weigh in on this issue over the past 15 years or so since the Heller case of 2008, but they're going to have to step into the breach sooner rather than later, because we are going to need some more clarity on this. For now, kudos to you, Judge Bashor, out in Cowlitz County, Washington. Atlanta hosts Global Black Pride 2024. So Global Black Pride is known as the world's first and only pride event dedicated to the Black LGBTQ plus community worldwide. It was first held in 2020 in the aftermath of the death of the martyr George Floyd in Minnesota. The first Global Black Pride held in 2020 was held in collaboration with, you guessed it, Grindr. So I guess this is two for the price of one, huh? I mean, one intersectional identifying trait is not good enough for you, so you have to double it up there. You know, why don't you silo yourself even more? Why don't we say the Global Black Pride, but only people who are between the ages of 25 and 35 and happen to prefer red and not blue as their favorite color, who happen to have gone to public school? I mean, while we're in the business of concocting all of these totally arbitrary traits and then amalgamizing together for the sake of some horrific intersectional stew, why don't we just go down further the rabbit hole? And unfortunately, this is part and parcel of a broader trend that you're seeing, and the university campuses have been ground zero of this when they do these quite literally segregated graduation ceremonies. You are seeing people who are so triggered to merely be in the presence of others who don't think like them, or perhaps even don't look like them, that they have to be totally siloed and separated from the others. Do you know what we used to call people who are so triggered from those who don't look like them that they have to be in a separate place? We call that racism. We call that John C. Calhoun in the antebellum period. We called that Jim Crow at the turn of the century 100 years ago. That is what it was then, and that is exactly what it still is today. Cedar Rapids Council has designated March 31st as Transgender Day. So Transgender Day, quote, celebrates transgender people by raising awareness of the discrimination they face and their contribution to society. And look, we saw the Joe Biden administration, the Biden White House, do this on a national level when they did it on March 31st. It actually coincided with Easter Sunday. Cedar Rapids is a city that really ought to know better. There is a large, large Christian population there in Cedar Rapids. I can't imagine that they were particularly happy about the fact that Easter Sunday was declared Transgender Day. In general, the backstory here, just to make sure we're all up to speed, what apparently happened was back in 2009, you had some transgender activists in the state of Michigan who just took it upon himself, herself, whatever he or she was, he took it upon himself to just declare, henceforth, March 31st shall be Transgender Day. And the Obama administration made some vague reference to this. The Obama administration, recall, was towards the incipient, was towards the very beginning of the whole transgenderism phenomenon. But it wasn't until the past 2-3 years that the Biden administration and local towns all across America have started to make this actually a thing. Look, the last I checked, when I look out my window, when I look at storefronts, when I look at restaurants all across the country, it seems to me like every day ending in Y is Transgender Day, is LGBT Day in general, because we really are in a society where these sort of things are not merely tolerated, but are actually feted and celebrated. So I'm not entirely sure what Cedar Rapids Council is thinking there, but they're probably taking their cues from the Biden administration itself. NIIA colleges ban transgender athletes from women's sports. So the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics is the first national collegiate athletic governing body to adopt such a policy. Well, good for you. They're basically making sure that if you are of a certain biology, if you have a certain chromosomal structure, then you are only able to compete against those who share your chromosomal structure. Again, some people might call this quote-unquote transphobic. I just call it common sense. And I wonder when the NCAA, most importantly, is going to mirror this policy. We have seen way too many images and videos over the past few years. Lena Thomas, the University of Pennsylvania, infamous transgender swimmer who was dominating in the pool, dominating Riley Gaines, the Kentucky swimmer who was a rival swimmer at the time. This stuff is galling. And how many people ultimately are going to have to get hurt? You know, in contact sports in particular, mixed martial arts, stuff like that, for goodness sake. I mean, even something as comparatively mundane as basketball or fencing, even though. How many people are actually going to have to get hurt and potentially grievously hurt in order for transgender activists and their acolytes all across the country to realize the wreckage that they are putting into motion with idiotic policies like this? This continues to be an issue that Republicans should absolutely seize the mantle on and run on. It continues to be an issue where the American people, by and large, are on the side of civilizational sanity. Finally, California isn't sure how effective its $24 billion spent on homelessness was. So a California audit found that the state spent $24 billion on homelessness over the past 5 years, but they're not sure how the funds were actually used. And sure enough, California's homeless population, which is estimated to be 171,000 people, they think that accounts for about 30% of the homeless population nationwide. Well, I was out in California about a year ago. We had a wedding, a gorgeous wedding in the hills of Malibu, but we were staying there in Santa Monica. I remember when Santa Monica was beautiful itself, when the Santa Monica Pier, the beach, the streets, the restaurants, when it was can't miss tourism. When we were there, homeless camps everywhere. We were going to this Tony brunch spot, this nice brunch spot. We were meeting my wife's friend and her fiance, and we were walking on the sidewalk, and this absolutely deranged, clearly mentally ill, drug-addled homeless guy is screaming at the top of his lungs. He's screaming profanities. But you know what the most disturbing part was? The most disturbing part wasn't what he was saying. That was pretty disturbing. It was that everyone around him acted so nonchalantly. You know why? Because they're used to it. You should not be used to mediocrity. You should not be accustomed to idiocy. Unfortunately, out in the Golden State, that is exactly what has been happening for a very long time.
This is the Josh Hammer Show.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.